like it's 8:40, and boy, I'm glad that our guest today agreed to do the program. His name is Robert Raymond, and I first heard about him in an article that I found on his website, www.raymond.org, R-A-Y-M-O-N-D.org. And I'll make sure there's a link to our website on there as well. I had some problems with it getting it to work, but I'll tell you what, an amazing article written on January 19th of this year entitled "The IRS Has an Income Tax Problem." Well, that certainly should resonate with most of you out there for the simple reason that, well, it's tax season, first of all. And those of you who have not already filed, probably kicking yourself or saying, I need to very soon. So I think it's important to get some truth out there. And again, just some of the most well-written stuff on the subject that I've seen come from my guest today. Please welcome to the program, Robert Smith. Thank you for your time today, sir.
Good morning, Frank. How are you doing?
I'm very good, very good. And as is usually the case when it comes to taxes, very confused.
It is the most convoluted subject that I've ever experienced. There's about 17,000 pages of obfuscation and gobbledygook that confuses even most lawyers, politicians, and bureaucrats. And so the purpose of my article was to try and simplify the issue and get some questions from the government to clarify, you know, the average American's obligations under the law. And if I can lay a little foundation for this...
Please do, because people want to know.
Okay, so here, I want to ask you a couple of questions. They're very simple questions.
All right.
And they're not designed to embarrass you or anything like that.
Okay.
But do you believe that people should obey the law? I mean,
yeah.
Do Americans have an obligation to obey the laws of this country?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, certainly, to make it more complicated an answer than it needs to be, I would say that, you know, speaking morally, if a law... it goes against things like that. I think you, as a human being, have to answer to a higher authority. But certainly,
absolutely,
if the law is there, I think absolutely you should obey it. Yeah. That's what it's there for.
As a general principle, I agree with you. We should obey the laws of the country, and obviously, we can put pressure on our politicians to change laws that we feel are immoral or anything like that.
Sure.
Do Americans have an obligation to do anything other than what the law requires? Or if the law doesn't require you to do something, does an American have an obligation to do it?
I would say, again, morals aside, no.
Absolutely. So let me just ask you a simple question. Do you know what law makes an American citizen or American liable for the individual income tax?
As far as I know, due to my... interviews with people such as yourself and D.B. Kidd, I don't believe there is a constitutional requirement for citizens in this country to pay income taxes.
Well, then how do we know that there is a law? If you don't know it, I mean, I've spent the last 10 years of my life, let me set this up a little bit.
Okay.
Put forth, I've been involved in politics for a number of years, in third-party politics, and we're going to a meeting in St. Louis, and you know, I'm a roofing contractor. I've been a roofing contractor for 25 years. That's how I make a living to support my family. I've had a number of experiences prior to my political involvement with the IRS that were rather unpleasant.
I'll bet.
And but you know, I felt it was, as a moral man, that if I had an obligation to pay my taxes, I had an obligation not to cheat on my taxes, because that's an immoral act.
Yeah.
Deceptive, it's wrong, and a moral man doesn't do those kinds of things, even if he doesn't agree with them. But a friend of mine put forth the proposition that the law didn't require you to pay taxes, and I responded quite frankly, like everybody else does. I says, you know, that's really interesting. You should go ahead and do it, and I'm going to watch you, and if you're right, I'm going to be with you.
Yeah, if you don't go to jail, maybe I'll think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was like everybody else. I says, you know, I mean, this is interesting, and certainly I like these kinds of intellectual engagements because it forces you to think about things. But, you know, over the next couple months, this issue started to pop up all over the place, and it kind of made it hard to ignore for a while. So I ran into a gentleman from Michigan, and he had a lot of information on the tax. And so we went to talk to him, a friend of mine who's an attorney now, in fact represents Joe Bannister of California and some of his dealings with the government, and we can talk about Joe later. But we went to see this gentleman in Michigan, and he was telling us all of these things about the tax, and he says, you know, you don't have to believe what I'm telling you. Call the IRS and ask them what law requires you to pay the tax. And I thought to myself, well, that seems fairly simple and relatively safe. I mean, I can't get in any trouble for asking questions, can I? And so I called the IRS offices and I put forth a very simple question. Do you know what law requires me to pay the income tax? And she goes, no. And I mean, and I says, huh? You don't know? And she goes, no. So, you know, I kind of hung up the phone and went, well, gee, that's interesting. I should write my congressman and ask him. And I spent the next year of my life writing letters to people asking them the same question, and I never got an answer. 10 years, I have not gotten an answer. I've gotten sued by the United States for asking the question, but I never got an answer. So I'm thinking about this, and I'm thinking, you know, and of course, you know, the deeper, the more you're studying, the deeper you get into it, the more questions you have, and the more it becomes obvious that that no one really has a handle on the situation. And I decided that it needed to be, the questions needed to be answered. The problem is that when you start talking about the tax code, particularly as someone who's been involved in politics, you're communicating to people, you're communicating to the average citizen, and when you start talking tax code and stuff, you just watch their eyes roll up in their head because they just like, I don't want to hear this stuff. It's too confusing. I don't get it.
Well, I'm one of those people. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. But I think if you really look into it, and it's a degree of a, you know, a sort of a scavenger hunt because, you know, you start looking into this and he says, well, pursuant to this code, and then you go look that up, and then you get reference to another source. But once you really put it all together, you see it doesn't apply.
Well, and the thing is that interesting is that putting all that aside, let's say I'm not that smart of a guy, but, you know, I have questions about the law. The law is obviously confusing. Lawyers, bureaucrats, again, no one understands this thing. It's 17,000 pages of gobbledygook. So as an American man, you know, who do I go to get the answers, and who has an obligation to answer those questions? And I believe the executive branch of the government enforces the laws. They interpret the laws that are passed by Congress. They decide how they are applied and who they apply to, because of course we all know that although the laws in this country don't apply to all the people, for example, you know, laws governing interstate trucking don't apply to you unless you drive a truck down the highway.
Sure.
Okay, that makes sense to everybody. So the government interprets the laws, and then they enforce those laws, and I figured they must know what laws they're interpreting. They have a moral obligation, as they work for us, they represent us, they have an obligation to clarify what the law is, what law they're enforcing, and who it applies to. And so that was the genesis of writing the article. I put forth a number of very simple questions so that the average person could kind of understand where I was going. And I put it in an article so that people understand why I'm asking the questions and why I believe the government has an obligation to answer them.
Well, I think that it's an excellent question. And certainly I want to find out some of the answers to these things. But what has been the response to this? Because certainly Joe Bannister, you know, he's in an interesting situation, and there's a few of them out there right now that are very pressing as far as, you know, different developments every day. This is something that people need to get a handle on as far as the basic question before they can really delve into what's happening with some of these people.
Yes. Well, you know, Joe Bannister is a great story, and first of all, Joe's a great man. He's a very fine man. You know, he went to college. He got his degree to be a certified public accountant. And he comes from a family of law enforcement people. I think he has brothers and stuff who are either policemen or sheriffs or things like that, firemen. He wanted to serve his country. He applied to the FBI to become an FBI agent using his financial skills, which he thought would be beneficial to the agency. They weren't taking applications at the time. And then for some reason or another, he applied to the IRS and got accepted and went into an extensive training program to be a criminal investigator for the Internal Revenue Service. He was driving around in California one day, and he's listening to a radio show. I think it's Jeff Metcalf, who has a show out in California, in the San Francisco area somewhere. And he was listening to David Kidd, who was talking about the fact that the law didn't require people to pay the tax. And Joe says, you know, I'm going to prove these people wrong. I'm going to check out these accusations. I'm going to spend some time researching it. And I'm going to show these people that they're wrong, because that's my job. And I took an oath to the Constitution. I'm going to uphold that oath. And if these people are cheating on their taxes, then I'm going to prove them wrong. So he spent about 2 years studying the accusations that were made and came to the conclusion that he couldn't disprove any of the things that they were saying. Now he had a dilemma. He says, well, now that I believe these things, or at least not that I necessarily believe what these people are saying, but I can't prove them wrong, he made a decision to write up a report on his research that he had spent a couple of years accumulating. And he proposed and sent it to the commissioner and to his supervisors for their comment and input. Their input was to hand him a letter telling him that he needed to resign his position. But no answers were forthcoming.
Wow.
And now this is a guy who had an $80,000 a year job. He was very secure. It was a job that he enjoyed. He was busting drug dealers and he was, you know, money launderers. He was going out there and he wanted to throw bad people in jail. And he took his job very seriously. But when they forced him to resign, he was obviously quite shocked by all of that. And he did resign, as a matter of fact. He suffered quite a bit from that experience.
I can only imagine what an absolute betrayal that feel like. But I have to tell you, those unfortunate experiences people go through make some of the strongest champions for truth out there. I can't tell you how many people I have as listeners of this program who have contacted me and over the course of time gone from calling into the show and telling me on the air that I'm absolutely insane to, you know, months, years, sometimes later, calling up and saying, I can't believe it, but it's true. I actually looked into it, and I've discovered that it's true. And in the case of Joe, certainly, you don't want to be part of the problem if there is a problem, if there is deception. If you know about it in good conscience, it's hard to continue doing what you've been doing.
It is, and it's been a good experience for Joe. I mean, he has paid a price. He gave up an $80,000 a year job. Obviously, I'm sure his wife wasn't very happy about that, because wives tend to enjoy a little financial security because that's by nature the way they are. And to give up a nice job like that meant that Joe was going to have to start all over in life. And of course, you know, the government has made it particularly painful for him. They've contacted his clients in his accounting business after he left the service and conducted audits on them and investigations of them and really forced or intimidated them into stop using Joe as an accountant and stuff. And then most recently, the IRS started investigating him criminally. Joe had made a decision that he was going to put aside in a trust account the money that he would have owed if he was paying the tax. So it wasn't a financial issue. He put the money aside.
Yeah.
I believe he sent them the money, but he wouldn't file the return. And, of course, so they started to investigate him criminally. And then most recently what they did is they've filed an action in the administrative venue that the IRS uses to remove his ability to represent people before the IRS. And probably the ultimate goal is to then take him before the Board of Professional Responsibility for accounting and have his accounting license taken away. And there are some very fine attorneys up in Wisconsin here who are representing Joe. The interesting thing is that they're having these administrative hearings, and of course, because Joe is fairly well known around the country, they were going to, people wanted to come and see the hearings and all of that. So they moved the hearings to a secure military base in San Francisco Bay and excluded the public and reporters from attending that hearing. And I wrote an article about that because it seems kind of Patriot Act-ish to have a public hearing on a military base. And I put that article out in, I think, mid-November, late November sometime.
Yeah.
It's posted to my website.
I wanted to talk about that, and unfortunately, I am also still subject to federal law real quick, so stand by here while we play the requisite legal identification. 17 seconds, folks. Join us here on on the AMX. My guest today, Robert Raymond, is with us, and Robert, thank you so much for being here. We mentioned a little bit about the Patriot Act and things like that. It seems to me, and a lot of guests I have on the show, stir up some trouble. I am one of those people. I do tend to stir up trouble as well. But I find it to be necessary in order to get the truth out there. Obviously, you're one of those people, too. But the IRS seems to be sort of like the, the assassins that are sent out, proverbially, to target people, just through harassment and whatnot, to consistently audit them, to put them under microscope, to refuse to give them their tax money that they are earned. I went through that last year. You know, I filed it. They said, this is how much you're getting back, and then I didn't get anything. I know people who have been on the show, as I said, who get audited every year consistently, and I think that that's a degree of harassment that they do, sort of stretching the law a little bit. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, they are harassment, and they're very effective at it, and the IRS and the Internal Revenue Code has granted a number of exceptions to the Constitution regarding your First Amendment rights to free speech, your right to privacy in your financial affairs, your right to due process. The IRS can, just by sending a letter, they can take your wages, they can go to your employer and tell him to give them your money, they can go to your bank and clean it out, they can take your house, throw you on the street, and not so much as ever seeing a judge. You can't go to court. You don't get any process. If you want due process, you have to go to a tax court hearing, which is nothing more than another IRS employee who adjudicates the issue, generally in favor of the agency. I was sued by the United States because of my political activities regarding their activities in 1997. They came and filed a civil suit. They sent five guys with guns to my house at 7:30 in the morning.
Really?
And it was very interesting to me because I had taken a position, a very public one, in regard to the agency. And I always knew in the back of my mind that someday they might show up and be unhappy with me. So it was like 7:30 in the morning. It was March 4th, 1997. I remember the day very clearly. And I was laying in bed, and my wife was there. I had little kids. My kids were like 3 and 4 years old. So, you know, little kids there, they like to get up in the morning early and come and snuggle in bed with your parents and stuff. And we're all laying there, and all of a sudden, boom! And I says, well, that ain't the paper boy. They're here. And
I wasn't necessarily surprised, but I imagine the reality of just even an anticipated threat, it's got to be pretty shocking.
It's just a little scary at times, you know, and it was kind of funny because I says, okay, they're here. I threw some clothes on. I start walking down the stairs, and all of a sudden the phone rang, and I'm going, five guys with guns at the door, telephone. Five guys at the door with guns, telephone. I think the guys at the door will wait. I'm going to answer the telephone.
Oh, wow.
And it was, which ended up being my co-defendant, who's now an attorney. He calls and he goes, are they there? And I says, yes, they just started knocking on the door. And he says, well, fine, call me back when you get done. So I open the door and, you know, Mr. Raymond, and I'm going, yeah, that's me. And they start jibber-jabbering, and I went, whoa. I says, who are you guys? You got identification, you know, what's your names, who do you work for, what do you want? And so we did that with the five guys, and they're all standing there and looking at me, and I'm going, okay, now that I know who everybody is, what do you want? And I says, well, we've got a civil summons to, you're being sued by the United States of America. And I says, okay, and they gave me the papers, and then they left. And I'm thinking, you know, they could have sent a $25 civil service process server to send the papers. I mean, that's certainly sufficient for service and stuff. Why did they send the five guys with the guns, you know? And I ended up spending the next 4 years of my life in the federal court system of the United States. And essentially, they had sued me because I was telling people the things that we were talking about today, and I had sold 3-ring binders, 32 3-ring binders, with analysis, cases, you know, court cases, some letters that people could send to the government, asking the kinds of questions that we're asking today. And essentially what they eventually ruled was because my speech was commercial, that they could restrain my speech. Now, let me get this right. I can sell pornography. I can sell newspapers, I can sell magazines. Those are all commercial activities. We're selling things for money.
Right.
Some of them are very, distasteful, but we're allowed to do that under the First Amendment of the Constitution. But if I sell 32 binders to friends and associates who, enjoyed what I was doing, the things that we were writing about, and wanted the information, but somehow that could be restrained by the federal government. And I took that case all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States, which eventually I decided did not to hear the case, and that was pretty much the end of it. So that ended in about 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started thinking about, okay, something's got to be done here. Something has to be done to raise the profile of this issue, because there's a movement out there who is, being involved in this this topic. They research the laws and they study and do all of these things, and that's certainly out there, particularly on the internet stuff. Some of the information is very, very good, some of it's not very good. People should be very careful about what they read, and or so they should think very carefully about what they read. And I want to caution everybody, I would never recommend to anybody not to file those forms. And even though maybe there's no legal requirement, in my opinion, to not file those forms would be to bring the worst kinds of harassment on you. It would ruin your life, your family, your business. I get letters and things from people all over the country. I've gotten them for years about the various horror stories about what has happened to people who have engaged this agency. And so I'm going to, again, caution everybody. Just because you hear this stuff from me and you hear from other people and you read this stuff and you believe it to be true, do not stop filing your forms. There's other ways to deal with this issue. And again, that was kind of what I did when I wrote the article, was to say, let's create, first of all, we have to mainstream the issue. The issue is pretty much, there's a lot of people who are unaware of the issue, and I wanted to bring it to the average American to say, look, there's a problem here that needs to be looked at, it needs to be discussed, people need to contribute money to people who are going to make a political effort to, first of all, communicate this issue to the average American, and then start utilizing novel litigation and sort of politicize the issue to force the government, first of all, to answer some questions and then to make some changes, to change the system we have, because it's evil.
I think that's very good advice. People do have questions, though. I mean, it seems to me that when you are, I guess, confronting the reality of this, you may feel helpless. You may feel like your hands are tied. What can people do to make a difference, to benefit not just themselves, but their children, to right a wrong that's been going on for decades? I mean, because certainly the process of gradualism is going to see the revocation of every right that we have.
Well, we see that right now with the Patriot Act. And, and to me, in my mind, the Patriot Act was nothing more than an act to quell or to put down the coming political dissent that's coming in America. The average American is very unhappy that, his politicians don't respond to him. They've done nothing to get the government out of our lives. And think of this. I was born in 1954. I'm almost 50 years old. I grew up in the late 50s, early 60s as a young man, as a teenager. And, my parents didn't have a lot of money. We weren't, my dad was a laborer. My mom was a secretary. But we led a good life. We lived in, a decent home. The neighborhoods were clean. They were safe. We rarely saw the police. We never saw the government. We never interacted with the government. We just were allowed to live our lives. We were allowed to be left alone to work, to enjoy the comforts of our families, and to enjoy the companionship of our friends. And now you look today, and everywhere you turn, you have to ask permission from some bureaucrat to do almost the most simplistic things in your life. In my community, if I want to put a new light fixture on my front porch, I have to go and get a permit. I have to pay a $50 fee, even though the light fixture only cost me $30. If I want to put up a little shed in my backyard, and I got this from a guy who was doing some work in my house. And he says, by the time I got done, it cost me $1,500 just to get permission to put up this stupid shed in my backyard. You can't work. You can't get a bank account. You can't get utilities. You can't drive a car. You can't engage in your professional occupation without providing a Social Security number. And if you don't believe me, just start saying no every time somebody asks for your social security number.
Actually, I do that already, and it is, just when I moved here, which is about 3 years ago, I was calling to get my utilities turned on. They said, I need your social security number. I said, no, I don't give that out. And she was just speechless. she said, well, I need something. And I said, well, I'll give you something, but you can't have that. It's kind of like asking for, you know, a genetic sample. It's like there are certain things that don't get given out, you know, and that's one of them. But you're absolutely right. It's almost shocking when people are refused that. So I'm with you on that completely.
And the government, to a certain extent, has kept us so occupied with just basic survival. I mean, you know, the average American, you know, he works hard, his wife has to work just so they can provide. One of them works to pay the government, the other one works to take care of the family. And they're occupied with their jobs, making a living, trying to provide a decent lifestyle for their families and stuff. And they really don't have a lot of spare time to study and research some of these issues, to, you know, become politically active, participate in organizations that are trying to make these changes. They're just basically trying to survive. And it's a very difficult process nowadays to just survive. I mean, I know people who make, I mean, it used to be, I mean, when I started my business and stuff as a roofing contractor, you know, the first couple of years were kind of lean, and I understood that. I was just getting started. And then, you know, 1 year I made $18,000, and I said, oh, that wasn't too bad. But next year I'm going to go for 21. And, you know, the next year you make 21, and every year you make more. But your standard of living goes down. When I was making $20,000 a year, I could afford to buy a little house. And now that I make much more than that, I struggle to pay my bills. And I'm going, what's going on here? Where's all the money go? And it's very frustrating. And a lot of people are very, very unhappy about it. And now you see, you know, the government's expanding not only its police powers, but it's taking more and more money from the average American. It's regulating his life in more and more places. It regulates how you raise your family, how you discipline your children, how they're educated. You have very little control over your personal life anymore. And I think people are starting to get fed up with that. I think they're tired of having somebody else tell them how to live their lives. And so I think the government is anticipating that there's going to be more unrest and dissent about the things they're doing. And so they've created a mechanism by which they can intrude and pry into your most personal private affairs. And of course, the government is in a situation where if you can compile enough information on an individual, you can certainly make it look like somebody's doing something wrong. So if they don't like you, they can come and pick on you and ruin your life, even though you had no intent to do anything wrong and no intent to violate any laws. I'm sure you've heard the horror stories of, you know, farmers covering up a puddle of water in his field or something, and all of a sudden, you know, some government agency comes in and sues him and mm-hmm. essentially ruins his life. And he's going,
absolutely. Well, you know what's interesting about all this? I don't know, Robert, how many radio interviews you do, but my listeners get harassed a lot by government agencies. I've had a couple that had their computers confiscated because a lot of my guests have websites that I'll direct people to. Some have been followed, things like that. As far as those types of threats, I don't get them from those, but I do get individual threats. I don't know, maybe they're coming from the government, but I get death threats all the time. You know, presumably, the worst way you can be threatened or intimidated is through the law, by some agency, some outfit being able to legally do these things to you, like you said, just absolutely ruin your life.
Yeah, you see all over the country. You see, I mean, I have a lot of friends in Nevada, and of course, you know, many of them were ranchers. You know, for hundreds of years, they've used the. I mean, first of all, the federal government owns, I think, 80% of Nevada, which is a bone of contention for Nevadians. Who live there all their lives and stuff, but you know, they've shut down roads, they've shut down access to pasture land for their cattle and stuff, and what those laws do is really hurt the little individual non-incorporated rancher who's just, you know, got a herd of cows. He's leading a nice, clean, simple lifestyle. And the laws that are being passed favor the very large corporate type of situations where they can afford to comply with these laws because they have lots of money. And, of course, by forcing the little guys out, the average guy, they eliminate competition, and pretty soon they have a corner on the whole market, whether it be farming, ranching, or any other kind of endeavor that people engage in. And so it seems to me that the government has done more damage to the American way of life than anything I can think of.
Well said. Well, we're getting a lot of questions, people calling up here. Would you mind taking some questions?
Not at all.
Wonderful. Unfortunately, your phone seems to be a lot quieter than some, so we may have to have them listen to the response off the air, but we'll certainly give it a shot. Questions from our guest today about your taxes. Robert Raymond has joined us today. And give out your website, if you would, please.
The website, I'm going to spell it out because it can be confusing, but it's okay. www.raymond.org. And it's raymond.org, but that's a great place for me to find me. They can find a lot of information about the things we talked about, and
they're contacting
me through that site.
Wonderful. Outstanding. All right, well, let's do it. 582-1049. AMX.
Hello, Brett.
Hello.
Eric.
Hey, Eric.
I've been doing a lot of
information
right now on the radio.
I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing, but I got enough of it to get the gist of it.
That's excellent. Thank you very much.
And the thing that I like...
God bless you all. Keep doing what you're doing.
Well, we need it.
You bet.
Thank you so much.
You know what I enjoy about the call is that, you know, first of all, I'm encouraged by the number of people that I run into who actually take the time to study, you know, our form of government, which is one of the finest forms of government ever created in the history of mankind, that provide the highest level of individual freedom for its people. And I commend them for taking the time to do that, because it's a lot of work. There's a lot of stuff to read. And, you know, the average guy isn't trained in law and to comprehend all these things, but if you read it and you think about it, you start learning about, you know, what kind of country we have or we had. Now, he makes a number of interesting points, and you know, he mentioned about the, you know, president declaring war. I don't know if he actually declared war, but of course we are not engaged in a war. And I mean, to a certain extent, you know, the president had to do something about, you know, the attacks in New York and Washington and on 9/11.
Sure.
And I'm not going to judge that decision, but the power to make war resides in the Congress.
That's right.
That's what the Constitution requires. When we're going to send our young men to go out there and fight for a cause, I mean, in America, I mean, today we have troops in, I think, over 100 countries in the world. And I'm trying to think, why? You know, what is the point of all this? Are we trying to make the world safer for Exxon, or are we doing this in the interest of the American people? I just don't know. But he doesn't have the authority to send troops anywhere without Congress first setting forth a declaration of war, commanding him to put the machinery in process to do so. And of course that...
And this is just, you know, my recollection here, and I don't know how valid it is, but I believe that he was given the authority to root out the terrorism behind September 11th, which is why everything must be subsequently linked to September 11th.
Yes.
Iraq and whatnot, and, oh, well, we want to go into Iran and Syria and North Korea. Well, guess what? Al-Qaeda has connections there. It has to be something of that magnitude in order to make it legal, but... It's, I think, the most fascinating thing that really ties all this together, what the caller said and what you have been saying, and probably will continue to say for a long, long time, is simply this, that we as a society have allowed ourselves to be dumbed down. Now the caller said he's moved away into the woods and he's cut off all communications with mainstream media and things like that. I think that he's probably the smartest person out there because he's done so. Now, I can't. Simply because of my job, I have to be plugged into at least some of the disinfo.
Yeah.
But luckily, I can see it for what it is. But we're so distracted by everything, We have to have an instant gratification, a fast food society where everything is served up quickly, including our information. Now, I think because we are so distracted by, you know, 300 channels and got to work nonstop in order to pay for those 300 channels, so when you do have 5 minutes to think, you turn off your brain, you turn on the TV. That's a huge problem. And as this has been going on through this process of agilism, in every aspect, the federal government has gotten bigger, has gotten more powerful, and we the people have gotten weaker and a little less aware of how quickly we are losing control of, like you said, the greatest system of government that probably has ever been on this planet.
Well, and they've done a very good job of keeping us distracted. I mean, you talk about modern technology. I mean, right now you can plug in. I mean, I can go to any country in the world, read their newspapers. I mean, you're bombarded with information to the point where you suffer information overload. And quite frankly, you get to a point where you just say, you know, I'm not going to listen to the news anymore. I don't want to. I don't care about the latest horror story. I just don't have time to process all that information. And it's also designed, in my mind, to demoralize the average American to thinking that there's nothing he can do about these things, and that he's just shut up, pay his money, and stay out of the way. And that's a horrifying thought, to think that that's how they might view us, that we're nothing more than a human resource with a serial number to be used in the global economy like so many sacks of grain. It's horrifying where we find ourselves today.
Well said. Well said. Take another call. Hey, Max.
Hey, Max.
Kat, you about killed me with feedback.
I know. I didn't think I was getting answered that way.
Sorry.
That's okay. Oh my God! Amen. I only have one thing to say though.
Okay.
This is depressing a little bit.
Yeah, it can be.
I usually don't let stuff get me down. You know, stuff happens. Life is no fun sometimes. But there's good things about it too. But this whole thing is sad because there's really nothing you can do. It's just another joke. I mean, if you have money and you can handle being let down by the government, you try to stand up for yourself, and that's one thing. But when you're someone like me, it's like, you know it's bad that you're dealing with it. And it just sucks.
Well, I would say this. I think awareness is one of the most important things, because when you have some of the most, some of these major trials that have gone on and are going on as we speak, the newspapers and the media coverage of those trials don't delve into the whys. All you find out is so-and-so is being charged with tax evasion, and you assume, okay, this guy is a criminal on par with Al Capone. He was a tax evader too. So therefore, you just leave it alone. But what you have to do is you have to realize that these people are fighting the fight that you don't have the guts to fight, that I don't have the guts to fight. You know what I mean? They're being taken to court, and they're standing up for what the Constitution actually says. And that is something that takes huge balls. And really, I couldn't do it. I don't have the resources available. I don't have... And I'm a guy, and you know this, and I know you are the same way. You're the kind of person who will stand up for what is right, no matter what. It's just that this is such a huge fight, but there are people out there fighting it for us, and we need to know the background, not so that we can go ahead and start a revolution or so we can stop filing our taxes, but so when these situations come up in court, perhaps it'll come up with you on the jury.
Yeah, that's a great point.
What's going on?
That is an
I know I am.
All right.
That's what I heard.
That is an excellent...
question.
Yes.
Is there anything special I should know about filing this year that
okay.
I should watch out for?
That is a wonderful question. I'll let you listen off air, okay?
All right, great.
All right, go back to your feedback there, and we'll talk to you soon.
<I'm sorry. laughs>
Don't worry, I'm just kidding. All right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. All right, Robert, comments and then the answer, if you would.
Well, first of all, your comment on the jury system, one of the things that got rid of prohibition back in the 20s was when the government could no longer get convictions of people being tried for, manufacturing alcohol. You got some little old, my grandfather was a moonshiner back in the old 20s and stuff, and, he used to make whatever he made down in the basement and stuff, and he'd sell, a bunch of quartz out on the street and stuff, and, he wasn't making a ton of money off of it, but that's what he did, and he wasn't hurting anybody. But the juries were so fed up with prohibition that they stopped convicting the people that the government was trying. And that had to take place in the tax movement. We must stop throwing people in jail for taking a principled stand and demanding answers to this tax and how the law is being applied. Your listeners will get a chance to sit on the jury someday.
Mm-hmm.
And they should look at that experience and what the government presents to, as evidence of a crime with some skepticism. I have no problem throwing people who sell drugs and doing those kinds of things that are hurting our communities. I have no problem throwing those people in jail. But when a man takes a principled stand to expose an injustice, we have to stop throwing those people in jail. And there's way too many. We have a whole class of political prisoners in this country now who are in jail for exactly those kinds of things, and that must end. Now, I don't give tax advice, and because of the injunction that's against me, I've been prohibited from doing so. But I would suggest this, that for the time being, you know, find someone who will operate within the system to keep you out of trouble.
Yeah.
Because again, once these people start looking at you and decide that they don't like what you're doing and how you're doing it, they can make your life very difficult. And I don't wish that upon anybody, especially people who aren't equipped to defend themselves, lack the resources to hire an attorney. I mean, if you get prosecuted in a criminal tax trial, then it's going to cost you $50,000 to $100,000 to get a good lawyer to try and get you out of that mess.
Yeah.
And that's very expensive, and most people don't have that kind of money laying around without mortgaging their houses and ruining their lives. So, I mean, you know, that is not the way to fight this fight.
Yeah.
But there are people such as myself, like Joe Bannister. For me, my objective, first of all, I've created an organization, a foundation to advance this issue, to make it a public issue. My goal is to first communicate, because if you take my article, and I don't know how many of your listeners have actually read the article, they can find it on my website. But if they read that article, we'll very simply lay out what we're trying to do as far as, you know, the questions we're asking. If they will take that off my website, download it, share it with their friends, send it to as many people as they can think of, and give them the web address so their friends can come see it, then they will, the more people that know about this issue, the more awareness we'll have of what's going on. Secondly, we are running that article that you read. I ran in my local newspaper, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It's the largest paper in the state of Wisconsin. I spent $4,000 to run that in the Sunday paper on January 18th. It was a quarter page ad. I paid the money out of my own pocket and ran that ad. And now, you know, that ad went all over the state of Wisconsin. I want to run more ads like that, exactly like that, in all the major newspapers around the whole country. And I'm going to continue to do that over the course of the next year. Once we've raised public awareness to a certain point, we have a staff of attorneys who are interested in this issue, who are researching this issue, and are going to start litigating these issues in the courts of this country. And they're very good at this stuff. They know this stuff better than anybody. They're absolutely fearless, and they're ready to go. But those things take money. And quite frankly, the solution to this problem is communication and resources. And so we're not asking people to do what I do. I've already committed myself. I'm on the train, and I'm not getting off until it gets to where it's going. So my course in life is pretty well set. But if people will support us and help us, then the more support that they give us, the faster we can move, the bigger we can make this issue.
Yeah.
I want every American in this country to know that the government has an obligation to answer basic questions about the law, and they must do so publicly. They must do so, not the gobbledygook that they generally send out when people ask these questions that are meant to confuse them, but very candid and simple answers. What law makes me liable for the tax? What is the definition? You know, do you know, we haven't gotten to this, and let's just go through this briefly, what the definition of income is. I mean, everyone has their own ideas. I mean, they've made us think that our wages, our labor is income, but there's no definition of income in the code. None. So how do we know what gross income is?
Yeah.
How do we know what adjusted gross income? How do we know what taxable income is without knowing the definition of the fundamental word in that phrase, income? And of course, to really get a handle on what that term means or meant, we have to go back to when they passed the original 16th Amendment and before that even, because prior to the last 1,000 years, income was always understood to mean a profit separated from its capital source. And simply put, if you, as an investment, let's say, if you invested $1,000 in the stock market, that's your capital source. And you make a profit of $100, you now have $1,100, but you made a profit of $100 on that $1,000 investment. That $100 is income. It's a gain separated from its capital source. And that's always been the understanding of what the term income means. So when a man takes his labor and he goes out there and he exchanges it, he negotiates with a guy who manufactures something, or he works for a construction company, he exchanges his labor for money. Now, where's the profit there? I mean, doesn't a man's labor have value to him? I mean, isn't your time, your labor, valuable to you? Don't you have a limited supply of that? Doesn't God only give us so many years of time in which to conduct our affairs? And the answer is, of course. You know, some of us get 60 years, some of us get 80 years. If you're lucky, maybe you get 82.
Right.
So it's a limited resource to us. And with that limited resource, we can take that and exchange it for something so that we can take care of our families. Now, I don't see any profit there. I see an even exchange. I see an even exchange of an hour of my time for $15. And the more hours that I exchange, the more money I get. But there's no profit there. There's no gain. There is no income. So there is no taxable activity or commodity going on there that I have to pay a tax on. And yet they've convinced us all that somehow our labor is worth nothing. There's a zero value to our labor, and anything that we get for that labor is a taxable event. And that's a horrifying thought, because in essence, they control our labor. They have reduced us to a condition of involuntary servitude. We are slaves. Because any time one man controls another man's labor, that's the definition of slavery.
That's right, exactly right. I want to give out the website again here, www.raymond.org. And your name, of course, Robert Raymond.
Yeah.
One of the things I think I mentioned to you, we have somebody locally who does this. His website is portalforfreedom.net. You should check that out if you get a chance.
Yeah.
And he does that. He assists people suffering from government abuses. He helps them write letters, basically asking questions such as the ones you've been asking. Like, I'll be happy to pay this fine, provided you cite me which law I am subject to.
Yeah.
And of course, then they just drop it because they don't want people bringing up these things. This is dangerous information, Robert. People don't... the agencies, they may feel confident most of the time, but every time one more person learns the truth about income tax, I think they get a little more scared.
Oh, they do, because, you know, there's only one thing that the government respects. I mean, my experiences through the 4 years of litigation in my case, and my experiences watching what happens to other people, the courts have closed... The courts have refused to rule on these issues. There's no federal judge in the country who's going to rule against the income tax, whether the law requires it or not. They're just simply not going to do it. The executive wants the money. They need a couple $1 trillion a year just to fund all the nonsense that they think is important to us, which, of course, most of us don't believe it is. And, of course, the legislatures ignore us. They won't answer the questions. They won't give us clear answers. They won't help us to understand what's going on. And of course, when we question them or ask them to do something, they ignore us. So the government has pretty much closed off discussion on the issue. They're not going to deal with it. The only thing that they respect is when large groups of people demand that they do something. The day that we can accumulate, put together a group of 100,000 people and march them down to some state capitol and demand that they do something about it, is the only time that they will do something about this issue. And that's really what is required here.
Yeah.
We have to have 100, 200,000 people marching down the street, marching down in Washington, D.C., marching down in Little Rock, Arkansas, marching down in Madison, Wisconsin, going to the state capitol and saying, hey, we're fed up, we're tired, we're not going to take it anymore. We're letting you know we expect you to do something about it, and we're coming back. And then something will be done about it.
That's true. It's going to take awareness first, and then everything else after the fact. So you're absolutely right. Again, every phone line lit up still, so let's continue. AMX.
Right.
Yes.
Yes, I'll make this really quick.
Okay.
I have a great interest in it, due to the fact of my father's retired, served in the military, got a VA loan, had problems with the contractor, went to court, and due to the fact that a file of release apparently in court didn't get filed with the IRS, I guess it was about a year later, we received word, IRS, like, don't worry about it, everything's cool. 6 years later, they came back with a bill for $860,000. And me and my brother remember this very poignantly because we were standing there when he said he was with the IRS and with the Treasury Department, told us he could take anything up to our underwear and our drawers if you see. They are the IRS and we have no recourse. My question is for your guest is, for people who have gone through this situation where they've lost property, lost all this stuff, because it's literally demoralized my father and my mother, is there any way to get information try to beat this? Because I know there have to be other families who have gone through the same thing.
It's an excellent question. I will let you listen off air. Oh, you got it. I thought that was a great question.
It is.
Sort of the interesting thing about it is it seems that the judges could be our biggest advocates in situations like this, and yet they themselves, I believe, pay income tax, even though they're not required to.
Well, it's interesting because there's through some of our research and stuff, we've found that the IRS maintains a secret record system on the federal judges. And you have to assume that they're applying leverage to most of these judges. And there are good judges. I'm not saying there aren't, because I know a lot of attorneys. They deal with these issues on a day-to-day basis. And there are some good judges out there who don't let the IRS have carte blanche over, the situations. But for the most part, the abuse is horrifying. To think that a hardworking American man would have to come up with $800,000, which he doesn't have, where the government can take everything he has, including the underwear in his drawer, and totally ruin his life, ruin the life of his...
About it.
And then think like, do these people have no morals? Don't they care about us at all? It's horrifying. And you know what? There are thousands, tens of thousands of these kinds of stories. I get letters from people all the time in these kinds of situations. People, big, little, small. It doesn't matter. You get people who, after they pay their rent and buy groceries, got $107 a month to live on. They owe the IRS $2,000, and the IRS says, well, then you're going to have to sell your house. And you're thinking, I can sell my house. Where am I going to go? So the judges aren't inclined at this point to do much. But I tell you what, judges are political animals. They are very, very intuitive. They also know that in revolutions, the first people to hang are the judges, because they're the ones that enforce or impose the dictates of the king or the executive. And of course, so they know they're on the front lines when this thing goes south on them. So... that until they see sufficient political support where they see people in the streets who will not take this anymore, and all of a sudden the judges are going to have this kind of epiphany and go, gee, maybe it's time I start ruling on the laws as they are written, not as I'm ordered to do by the executive. And I think that is the way that you get these judges to start ruling on the law. This is the way that you start getting legislatures, cleaning up the law, and this is the way you get the executive to enforce the laws as they are written.
That's a great point, because even things that that aren't so obviously false, and yet have just been ingrained because of how long it's been in practice, Judges take a lot of heat when they go out on a limb for things like that. So certainly, if they knew they had the support of the people, they could certainly do something. That doesn't make sense. My problem would be the fact that, you know, you're looking at some lifetime appointments here. They have no reason to answer to the people.
No, and on the other side, the way the government was created, the lifetime appointment was meant to insulate them from coercion from the executive, because unless they committed some sort of gross acts of ineptitude or something like that, the executive couldn't get rid of them. And so that was supposed to be a protection against influencing the judges to violate the law or not to rule on the law. And unfortunately, it has worked the other way.
That's a great point, then. So do we have protection from agencies like that, or is that something you really can't talk about? It seems to me, you know, again, it would just be infuriating to have them sort of brag, I could take your underwear if I want. Take anything I want. Take this carpet, or...
I tell you what happened, Doug. There's a couple... I mean, this doesn't apply to most people because most people don't have the resources, but there was a great case this past summer in August. Vernie Kuglin, I'm sure you probably heard about her, but Vernie Kuglin was a FedEx airline pilot. She made pretty good money. She's part of the Libertarian Party in Memphis, Tennessee. She's very politically active. She's a very sweet looking, I don't think she's quite 60 yet. She's almost 60, but she's very energetic. She's very principled. And, you know, she became aware of this information and, you know, acted on it. And eventually the government came in and charged her criminally with 7 counts of tax evasion. And she hired my friend up here in Wisconsin, Robert Bernhoff, who's an attorney, and Larry Beecraft, who has been litigating these cases for over 20 years, as her defense team. And those are probably the two best lawyers in the country in dealing with criminal tax matters. And the government offered her a plea. They says, look, you know, I'm not privy to the exact arrangement, but they offered her a deal to plead guilty. And obviously it would have saved her the exposure to a number of years in prison and the loss of all her personal goods and all of that. And she said, no, I believe what I'm doing is right. I'm not going to cut a deal. I'm either going to win or I'm going to take my lumps. And so she fought it all the way. She had a great legal team. It cost her a lot of money, probably about $80,000. And the jury came back and essentially found her not guilty of all counts. And again, when the government still loses those kinds of cases, they had a very good jury. It was, they very carefully picked the jury, but they were thinking people, they listened to the evidence, they realized the government had an obligation to answer basic questions that Vernie had asked of them. They had not answered the questions, and so how could they throw someone in prison for a crime that she couldn't possibly understand, that no one understands? How can you throw people in prison when they can't possibly know whether they're doing something wrong, because
that's
the
right.
Law is so convoluted that no one understands. Nobody understands this. I mean, it's understandable if you want to spend the next 10 years of your life doing nothing more than reading tax acts, code sections, legal theory, and, you know, I mean, it's a daunting task, and it's not one that most people want to undertake. But, you know, anytime the government loses, they start backing off a little bit and reevaluating what they're doing. But the government has made a concerted effort. They've declared war on this movement. They are prosecuting people left and right. They're throwing lots of people in jail. They threw Dixon Cannon down in Texas in jail.
Yeah, we need to talk about that.
Dick was he was a very principled man. He's a good man. He took a position that he didn't have the right to take money from his employees and give it to somebody else, that money was theirs, that they didn't voluntarily, you know, ask him to take the money from them and give it to the government. And so we stopped withholding. And withholding is the nexus of this whole program, because through the withholding program, they get to take a little bit of your money, actually quite a bit of your money every week. And then they give you some of it back at April 15th when you file your returns. And of course, when they got a couple thousand dollars of your money, it certainly encourages you to file that return and try and get some of it back. And so the government's going to fight over this withholding issue, because if they lose withholding, if people don't pay incrementally the little bit per week, but instead, if they had to come up on April 15th and give the government a check for $4,000, they would be so mad but the system would collapse. And that's why they'll fight over withholding. And that's why they went after Dick. They were going to make an example out of any other employers who were going to take a like-minded stand. And the things that happened in his trial, he had two trials. His first trial, after about 8 hours of deliberation, the jury was deadlocked 11-1 for acquittal. And generally, what most judges will do is say, well, you know, they don't want to go through, economically, they don't want to go through another trial because of the expense, obviously, to both parties. You know, you have to start all over again and get another jury and go through the whole process all over again. So generally, judges will order the jury to go back and deliberate further and give it more time because they want a resolution to the issue at that point. But this judge declared a mistrial after 8 hours of deliberation and ordered a new trial. And of course, the second trial, they did everything they could to prevent Dick from presenting any kind of evidence or presenting a defense, a perfectly allowable defense. For example, a defense against tax evasion or non-filing is a reliance defense, and where you say, you know, I didn't have any intent to violate the law. I read certain information. I didn't believe the law applied to me, and I had a good faith belief that this information was true. There has to be some sort of intent to violate the law in order to convict them by the law. They wouldn't allow Dick to present that kind of defense. And essentially, what happened was the judge directed a verdict to the jury. The jury asked questions during the deliberations, asking the judge to provide, you know, the law that required Dick to withhold. The judge refused. The judge says, I've determined that Dick was required by law to withhold. And that's a directed verdict. He's telling them that, yeah, I'm not going to show you the law. I'm telling you the law says this. Go back and find this guy guilty. And they did. And this guy's facing 100 years in prison.
It's unreal.
It's shocking.
People need to know these things.
It is abhorrent to our system of government where you have rights. You have a right to defend yourself. You have a right to an attorney. You have a right to present a defense and let the jury decide whether you're guilty of a crime or not. And the government's going to pull out all the stops to make sure that these people get thrown in jail. Again, we've created a whole class of political prisoners who have taken a principled stand against this issue, and the government's going to just throw these people in jail. And this is intolerable.
Well said, well said. We've got about 10 minutes left to take a few more phone calls here. And I really appreciate you staying with us.
No.
I know that we had talked about, you know, an hour or so. It's already been an hour and a half, and it's been incredible.
Oh, and, you know, radio is a great format for discussion of these kinds of issues because there's enough time to really explore the issues, to talk about, to take questions from the listeners and stuff. And there's a good give and take going back and forth. And I've always enjoyed it. I've run for political office.
You were with the, hold on a second. Don't tell me, because I did some research, and I want to know if this is actually you, as opposed to me, just someone on something completely different. And that is it the U.S. Taxpayer Party?
Well, it was originally the Taxpayers Party, but a lot of people objected to the term taxpayers. They didn't like being referred to as taxpayers, so they changed the name to the Constitution Party.
The Constitution Party, which actually I know has had some significant trouble in getting established in Arkansas. I think actually we're required to have more signatures than another party to get candidates represented.
The political process does not enjoy third-party politics because they can't control it, so they make it very difficult to get on the ballot. It's not too bad in Wisconsin here, which has allowed me to run for... I ran for Congress two times under the Constitution Party banner, and then the last time I ran as an independent, and I got 31,000 votes in that election, so I mean, I'm making progress, but they like to control the system, and they don't like us dissenters out there mucking things up for them.
You're absolutely right.
Let's take another call.
Let's do it. Hey, Max.
Hey, top morning to you.
Good morning.
Great yesterday.
It's been a lot of fun, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember, but a couple weeks ago, a guy called in wanting to start a group, or wanted to know if there was a group. If there wasn't one, to start one.
Vaguely. It's hard to say. There's we get I think called for quite a bit of the show every day. So.
Well, I just want to know.
Okay, I would say, yeah,
certainly we can establish something. I will look into that and I'll make sure it's announced on the show. Okay.
Hey, thank you. God bless both of you guys.
Hey, thank you. You too. Yeah. Appreciate that. Thanks a lot.
Bye bye.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have to worry about me going away. Like I said, I'm on a train and it's on the tracks. It's going somewhere, and I'm on it until it gets to where it's going.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I imagine the first time you have, armed individuals at your door because of what you're talking about, that isn't going to inspire you to shut up.
No, I was very angry because
you have a Dr. David Kelly. You might be Vince Foster.
They endangered my family, my little children and my wife, and I take that very personally. And
that's right.
And you know something? Ever since much to my parents' chagrin, I've always been like this ever since I was a little child. And they go, Bob, you're intelligent, you're very social, you're friendly, the adults like you, you're very mature, but you're just a troublemaker.
Well, I can certainly relate to that.
Yeah.
Let's, I think we can get a couple more calls. AMX.
Yeah. The gentleman who called earlier?
Yeah.
He just recently called asking about that. Yeah, that was me. I guess about a month ago when he had the gentleman in Fayetteville, the lawyer.
Yeah.
And I just called earlier because my family is the one who basically got hit with all this stuff.
I see.
And the reason why I wanted to know if there was any kind of group associated or dealing with this matter is because there is no lawyer that pretty much I talk to wants to confront the IRS.
Sure.
And my question for your guest is, apparently, I believe it was in the early 90s or the mid-90s, weren't a lot of IRS advisors either reprimanded or fired for apparently bonuses on foreclosures, property, amounts, and stuff like that, and now there's something.
Oh, they had a bonus system.
Good.
They had a bonus system where the more money you stole from the citizens of America, the more bonus points you get, and then you would get, cash awards. And this is going on, and of course, that encouraged the revenue agents to go out and conduct a very abusive collection activities, and because the more money they got, the higher their bonuses would be. That's a shocking system. I mean, it may work in a private enterprise where you encourage your employees to produce more goods, but it shouldn't happen in a government agency that encourages their employees to steal more money from the citizens, particularly citizens who are helpless to do something about what's going on. I mean, again, it goes back to the issue, especially with the last caller, that is he in a position to spend? I mean, there's good attorneys who will fight those issues for him, but it costs money. You know, lawyers, he's got to run an office, he's got, a couple hundred thousand dollars of school debt and stuff. He's got to do the research. Westlaw is very expensive. It just costs money to litigate these things. And unfortunately, that closes off a remedy for the average guy who's, making $500-$600 a week. Where, where is he going to come up with $50,000 to get justice? I mean, is that where we're at in America, where, you got to have $50,000 to $100,000 to get justice? And these things can go through the court. I mean, my case went through the court system for 4 years. It went through the district court for 2.5 years. It went through the appellate court for a year, and it spent 9 months up at the Supreme Court. It was horribly expensive, and I had my attorney was my co-defendant, so I didn't have to pay him to litigate the case, but just doing depositions, hiring court reporters, document production. I mean, the toll on my personal finances was astronomical, and I didn't even have to pay the attorney. If I would have had to have paid him, it would have been no way would it have ever happened.
Right. Well, it's interesting, almost subliminally, how often we hear on all the mainstream news networks, the cost of freedom, the cost of freedom, the cost of freedom, and that is where we are, legitimately. We are at a point where if you have the money, you can do whatever the hell you want. We've seen it time and time again, and that is where we are today. And it's infuriating, and it can be terrifying, but again, knowledge is power, and awareness changes everything. So I want to thank you so much for your time today. My guest, folks, Robert Raymond, if you would please give out your website again, and what people can find when they go there.
Hey, it's great. It's www.rraymond.org, and they'll see some of my articles on there. I've got a collection of people who are very good writers. In addition to myself, they posted articles there. I've got contact points. It's a very simple website, but anybody that needs to get a hold of me can get a hold of me through the website. I would take some time to take a look at it. If you got some questions or you want to just touch bases with me, please do so. I try to answer all the emails I get. I'll continue to answer emails as long as I still can. I appreciate the opportunity to be in the show. And of course, if we can do this again sometime, just give me a call.
I would love that. We'll definitely be in touch. And you stay safe and continue fighting the good fight on behalf of all of us out there.
Hey, I'm very optimistic. Eventually, we're going to win this fight.
That's great. Well, I look forward to that day, sir. Robert, thank you so much for your time.
All right, Frank.
Have a great one.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Robert Raymond, ladies and gentlemen. Again, the website, awesome.